We'll go to the last appeal to be heard today, United States versus Gomez, number 12-1104. Ms. Rentz.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Appellant Gomez respectfully requests that this Court find that the District Court erred in admitting the 404B cocaine evidence against Gomez because it was pure propensity evidence. To begin, at the pretrial conference of this case, the District Court correctly decided that the subsequent bad act of possessing cocaine would not be probative as to whether Gomez had the requisite knowledge or intent regarding the charged conspiracy. During the trial, however, the District Court re-examined the issue and stated that the evidence would be allowed because the implication of defense counsel's questioning was that Gomez was not associated with drugs and that Gomez is as pure as the new fallen snow. Now, this statement itself was showing that the evidence was admitted to rebut Gomez's purity. This was a matter of propensity to commit a crime and nothing more. This court applies a four-part test in determining whether evidence may be admitted under FRE Rule 404B. Now, each prong of this test must be met by the government in order for evidence of prior acts or other crimes to be admitted. The government cannot meet this burden. Turning to the first prong, it has to do with the propensity. It is whether the evidence establishes a matter in issue other than the defendant's propensity to commit the charged offense. Rule 404B gives us a list of these other matters that may be at issue. These include motive, opportunity, intent, preparation, etc. Now, in the present case, the District Court purportedly admitted the evidence in response to the defendant's theory of mistaken identity in order to prove knowledge of the drug conspiracy and the identity of the conspirator. This court has already examined the issue of 404B evidence within the context of identity, and it has done so in both United States versus Simpson and United States versus Wright. First, in Simpson, the District Court had admitted evidence of prior drug deals of the defendants in that case to prove his identity, to which this court stated, certainly, the need to prove identity should not be by itself a ticket to admission. That's all the government has in this case. The court went on to say, simply because the identity of a person who sold cocaine was disputed does not give the government free rein to introduce evidence about a prior cocaine deal in which the defendant took part in. Now, the government maintained that because Simpson denied he was involved or delivered the drugs in question, that it could introduce this past evidence. This court pointed to United States versus Wright and disagreed with the government. Now, in Wright, the government introduced evidence of wiretaps of the defendant talking about other drug deals in which he was involved in. This court stated that while the telephone conversations in question with defendant Wright may show that defendant Wright was more likely than the average person on the street to be involved, it does not identify defendant Wright as the suspect in the present case. That is the exact same conclusion that this court should come to in Gomez's case. Our case is even stronger in that the cocaine that was found and is being attributed to Gomez and used as evidence against him at trial was found 26 days after the end of the charged conspiracy. Additionally, this cocaine connects Gomez in no way to the alleged supplier, Romero.
Ms. Rentz, how would this case be different if instead of finding a half ounce, the police had found, let's say, a half a kilo?
Your Honor, Even if the police had found a half a kilogram of cocaine, that cocaine in and of itself does not connect Gomez to Romero in a way.
It's connected to the location. It would be similar distribution quantities. It's only 26 days. Wouldn't that be a considerably stronger case for the government?
While it would be stronger, Your Honor, admittedly, it would not be enough. As in Simpson, there were other deals of the same amounts of cocaine, and this court stated that that simply is not enough to enter the evidence.
The problem in Simpson was that the guy had been dealing so much for so long that he couldn't remember whether his confession covered the particular transaction involved. I think Judge Bauer made that point in his separate opinion.
Your Honor, that is true, but United States versus Wright is also on point. In that case, you had another situation where there was other drug deals of the same idea of drug deals that were charged in the present case in Wright. Additionally, this case is just...
You don't think it matters that it's a half ounce instead of half a kilo here?
I think that the amount does matter. Obviously, with a smaller amount of cocaine, it could be a user amount and not a distribution amount of cocaine. And that does make a difference on the side of Gomez. Additionally, this cocaine was found after the date of the charged conspiracy and not before the date of the charged conspiracy.
Could you help me out on a matter in the record? Who was Individual B in the house that was searched?
Individual B, I believe, is Victor Reyes, and this man is important to the discussion as well.
It was in his bedroom that the scales and the plastic bags and the larger quantity of cocaine was found?
I believe so, but I would have to supplement the record.
It's already in the record.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. The reason Victor Reyes is so important to this discussion is because all or most of the evidence that the government points to identifying Gomez as the possessor of the cocaine could also point to Victor Reyes. Victor Reyes lived at the same address. Victor Reyes had state identification stating he lived at that address. Victor Reyes' name was on the same search warrant for the same address where the cocaine was found. The government cannot even prove that this cocaine was necessarily Gomez's that they found in the house, because Victor Reyes had the same access to the area. The only proof the government would put forward that it was Gomez's cocaine or that he knew of the cocaine in the house is that he was standing in front of the door of the bedroom. However, they cannot prove that
there were documents identifying him in that room.
That is true, Your Honor. However, there were documents identifying Victor Reyes and other individuals living in the house as well.
But it doesn't have to be conclusive proof, does it, to tie him to the uncharged conduct? Just enough that the jury could find.
It is a preponderance standard, Your Honor. You are correct. However, in this case, Gomez did not have actual possession of the cocaine, and the government would be hard-pressed to prove constructive possession. They cannot prove that he had exclusive control or access over the area or any knowledge of the cocaine itself. The cocaine was found in a pair of blue jeans or possibly a blue jean jacket, the record is unclear, in a pile of men's clothes. There were many different piles of clothes in the room. There were documents belonging to different individuals from the house, and there were many different adult and children residents of the location. Furthermore, we need not win on all four parts of this test. That is the jury finding prong. However, we also would prevail on the propensity prong.
Could I ask you, Ms. Rentz, on the date of September 3rd, 2010, how many people did the police observe with Mr. Romero?
On that date, they actually observed both Mr. Gomez and Mr. Reyes.
Anybody
with
else?
Romero. No, sir, not to my knowledge.
All right. You're willing to your rebuttal. I don't know if you want what you want to do.
May I briefly address the obstruction of justice argument?
Sure.
Just briefly, if this court were to rule against the appellant on the first issue, we would ask that you find that the district court erred in applying the obstruction of justice argument. The district court did not find materiality of the testimony that was needed in order for
Thank you, Ms. Renz.
Thank you.
All right. Ms. Krull for the government.
May it please the court. My name is Angel Krull, and I represent the United States of America. I'd like to start by answering a question that Your Honor had about who Individual B was. That was not Victor Reyes. The government identified this innocent third party as Individual B in its filings because it doesn't want to name individuals who are not charged, but it was not Victor Reyes. It was another adult male who lived in that residence. Victor Reyes, was not present on the day that Mr. Gomez was searched and that the cocaine was found. And this actually goes to how the cocaine evidence goes to the defense presented at trial, which was mistaken identity. The government admitted this cocaine evidence at trial specifically to rebut a defense that was put at issue by the defendant, that it was not him on all of those intercepted calls, that it was another individual named Victor Reyes that lived at the same residence. Now, evidence was presented at trial that beginning in April 2010 and throughout that entire summer, over and over and over again, a drug supplier from here in Chicago was making a personal delivery to a house in Milwaukee that the defendant lived in and that another individual, Victor Reyes, lived in. There was no question, based on GPS evidence, surveillance, and intercepted calls, that those deliveries were made. What the question was where did that cocaine go to once it got to the house? Did it go to the defendant's area in the house, or did it go somewhere else? And that's key here. That goes to the identity of who is that person on those phone calls, who inside the house is receiving that cocaine. And that was the key defense at trial, mistaken identity. Over and over and over again, the defendant raised that defense by questioning.
What part, the cross-examination of the agents, where the agents were asked whether Mr. Gomez had cocaine on his person on September 3rd, my understanding was that that examination was thought to have opened the door somehow. Do I understand now you're saying that it was the thrust of the defense rather than those specific questions and answers that was key to the ruling?
It was actually both. And your question actually goes to the other question I wanted to answer about who Mr. Romero, the drug supplier, interacted with that day, because these things are connected. He did, on September 3rd, do one of those deliveries in Milwaukee, and he parked about a block away from the defendant's residence. And on that day, the drug supplier met various individuals on the street. We presented a videotape, surveillance video, of that to the jury. He met with approximately seven or eight individuals, the defendant being one of them. The defendant walked right up to him and shook his hand, and that was shown to the jury. Now, on cross-examination, to go to your question, defense inquired of the agents who were conducting surveillance that day about how you didn't see any drugs on him, he had no paraphernalia on him, he did nothing illegal that day, which is true. That day, all the defendant did was walk on the street, and he was stopped and identified. The agent stopped to get his name, address, and telephone number, and that was the subject of the suppression hearing. But those questions, in addition to other statements made in opening statement and other questions throughout the trial, are connected to the identity issue because it's also going to this defense of wrong place, wrong time. You've mistaken me for somebody else. I'm completely just an innocent bystander who just happened to be in the vicinity of a drug dealer and another drug dealer who happened to live in the same house as I did. And so those two incidents, somebody else living in the same house who's the drug dealer, plus wrong place, wrong time, I'm completely not involved in drugs. You didn't find drugs on me or paraphernalia on me. Those things are connected.
Let me back up, because when you add that, I'm completely not involved in drugs, where does that come from? As I understand, the questions went only as to whether Mr. Gomez had cocaine on him on September 3rd. How does that, I'm not involved in drugs ever?
It also comes from the opening statement of the defense.
That was very specific about time.
Yes. In the opening statement, the defense did say that you're never going to hear evidence from, in this particular time frame, that my client possessed any cocaine. And that's true. There was never a seizure directly from the defendant's person.
So how does that open the door?
That alone doesn't open the door. You have to take it in context of everything that the defense was presenting to the jury throughout the trial.
We said last year in a case called Miller that you need a persuasive and specific answer to the question. How does this evidence prove whatever it is you're using it to prove under 404B?
Yes.
And I guess what we've got here is weeks later, user quantity, and I have trouble understanding how the defendant's possession of a user quantity of cocaine weeks later shows that it was the defendant on the phone calls that were part of a conspiracy to distribute several kilos of cocaine.
It goes to the location of where the cocaine was found, because the defendant's defense is that it was Victor Reyes, who also had control over an area of that apartment. And so the evidence
deliveries presumably were, pretty big quantities, weren't they?
They varied. A quarter kilo sometimes, 9 ounces, was a common delivery amount. Now, a half ounce isn't necessarily a personal use amount. It could be multiple personal use amounts. A half ounce is not
a single dose, but
correct. And when we have this pattern of the drug dealer making these regular deliveries to the defendant over the summer, and the last delivery was only a few weeks earlier, this is the same type of drug found in the defendant's bedroom. This is the same type of drug that they're talking about over the interceptions on the wire. When the issue is who is on those intercepted phone calls, is it Victor Reyes or is it the defendant himself? And when the defendant is saying it's Victor Reyes and these drugs that are the same type of drugs on the calls are not found in an area controlled by Victor Reyes, they're found in an area only 26 days later in an area controlled by the defendant himself. Now, the evidence that the defendant controlled that area was really strong, and that was a focus of the judge at trial, that at 6 a.m. in the morning, the defendant himself is seen coming out of this bedroom, and that there were multiple pieces of documents presented to the jury with his name on it. Yes, there were other documents in that bedroom that had others' names on it, but the agent testified that the common name on these documents were the defendant's name. So there was more than sufficient evidence for the jury to find that that was the defendant's room and that was the defendant's cocaine found in that room. Now, even if there was an error here in admitting the 404B evidence, the error was certainly harmless because the evidence was overwhelming. This was a Title III wiretap case. It was a case where we presented 61 intercepted phone calls to the jury. And it was a case where the defendant himself...
We had great evidence against somebody, right? And the question is, was it this guy?
Well, the defendant himself said, that's me on the phone calls.
Agents testified to that effect, right?
He did. An agent testified to that fact, and also an interpreter, a contract linguist with the FBI, testified to that fact. And she said that for months she was in the wire room listening to the voices and transcribing and translating, and that she had become familiar with his voice from her months of doing that work. And then on the day of his arrest, she met with him in a room and heard him answer questions and immediately recognized that voice as the voice that she had heard over the intercepted wire for months. So there was strong evidence, in addition to the defendant himself admitting, that's me. So there was strong evidence that it was the defendant on the wire, and they never even really challenged that those phone calls on the wire were about drugs. That wasn't the defense at trial. And so the calls were about drugs, about drug dealing, and he admitted that was him. So even if there was an error here, it was harmless, and the court should affirm on that basis alone. Now, turning to the obstruction of justice enhancement, there was no abuse of discretion by the district judge here.
Thank you, Ms. Kroll.
Thank you, Judge.
Any rebuttal? Your time has expired. You have 1 minute.
Very briefly, Your Honors, the government is asking you to pile inference upon inference in order to find that this evidence went to Gomez's knowledge or identity. It simply did not. It was pure propensity evidence, and the opening of the door was simply done by a defense counsel who was eliciting facts about the time period of the conspiracy. This certainly is not enough to admit 404B evidence. Additionally, the error was not harmless to defendant Gomez. The government talks about overwhelming evidence against the defendant. However, most of that evidence could equally be attributed to Victor Reyes. There is an identity issue. As to the 61 phone calls, they were put in by readers. The jury did not hear them. There was confusion on the record as to who was speaking because it was put in by Reader 1 and Reader 2 with no names. Simply, it's just not enough evidence for this court to be certain that the jury's judgment was not substantially swayed, and therefore we would ask for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case is taken under advisement.